Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the talk show worth talking about, Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio, with your co-hosts, Kevin Hogan, founder of the Healing Stigma Program, and Scott Fullerton, voice of Left of Straight Radio. From A-list entertainers to hometown heroes, join Kevin and Scott as they interview those on the cutting edge of challenging stigma with insight, humor, and always compassion. Give them your ears and they'll open your mind. For positive talk with positive results, you're listening to Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. Now here are your hosts, Scott and Kevin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Thursday, April 14th, and it's another great Healing Stigma on Left of Straight Radio. I'm your co-host, Scott Fullerton, along here with Kevin Hogan. Kevin, how are we doing today?
Wow, the sun is out. I think we have absolutely entered into spring. I am so grateful for that. So another Thursday's here, and the weather is improving, and baseball is underway. So, yeah, sports fans, we're happy to be here.
I agree 100%. We actually are 57 today, and by I believe it's Monday, we're hitting 69 degrees and not looking back.
Yay. So that's good. That is absolutely good. We needed it.
Well, we've got another great show today. And coming on just a little bit, we have Ilio Cruz, fantastic advocate for the bisexual community and the new executive director of Faith in America. I can't wait to talk to him about all of that. But let's start with how your week was going. You've had a busy week with Healing Stigma, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so excited, and if I forget anything, people will have to forgive me and can catch up, or, you know, I'll be tweeting or whatever. But, yeah, it's been a week of presentations, responding to people. The program has been taking off, not just locally and nationally, but even globally. And that's just really great. And, you know, it's a lot of work that needs to be done, and I'm really happy to be part of it. And hopefully, as we move forward with it, you know, the radio is, I think, part of this conversation as well. And, you know, I keep encouraging people to listen and to sign up for any part of it that they find is helping them. But I've been working also with professionals and organizations now, and to see, you know, all the services get this, you know, growth and need people thanking, you know, me for doing it. It's really quite amazing. I'm really thrilled and honored to be doing it.
Well, I'm so excited for you for all that. It's just been some growing by leaps and bounds. Everyone's finding out about the program and just realizing what a great tool it is, especially with everything we have going on nowadays to be stigmatized about. And you also had some great news in your poetry book this week too, right?
Oh, yes. The book, My Maria Strad, is going into digital format, so it's going to be available for those that do the whole Kindle and e-read and all that shortly. Not yet, but very shortly. Again, I think that's because of the attention that it's been getting, probably as a Lambda Literary finalist. People have been reaching out and saying, hey, you know, it's great in hard copy, but we'd like to get it, you know, hey, Kevin, how'd you like to come join the 21st century? So the fact that that's going to be happening shortly, and all of the people that are making that happen, my publisher, Reddy McQuilkin at Antrim House, was one of our guests previously. That was a great episode. He's really fun. These are organizations that, you know, work with librarians and booksellers and all the rest. And, you know, when it came down to the request for, they requested that the book be available in e-format, you answer that with a yes. That's the only way you answer that question. You answer that with a yes. So it's been a week of a lot of yeses. But, you know, can I just double back a second there? Because both of these things for me, you know what it's like, Scott? The expression in the poetry is a lemonade, and Healing Stigma is how I made the lemonade when, you know, life dumps lemons on you. And so the fact that the program and the poetry are growing hand in hand is such an exciting thing. So I've been working with, you know, professionals. I did a presentation that went out to hundreds through the working committee that I'm on with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And the response to that has been, I think, as positive and as needed, and I'm so excited to do it, as the work with individuals, let's say, that are joining the peer-to-peer support group, the secret one, you know, through the Healing Stigma website for those that are being stigmatized. And then the professionals group is taking off as well. And any of these things you can find on the Healing Stigma website. And so when the poetry and that grow together, it means, you know, for all of those other people we have had and will have on the show, that these forms of expression are really important. it's validity that expressing yourself and keeping that identity strong at a time when you're being stigmatized is maybe the most important way, one of the most important ways to surviving it.
Right, exactly. Well,
yeah.
I'm so excited. Yeah. I've had a great week of shows myself on Monday.
Yeah,
I had a really interesting show on Monday.
Yeah.
Well, I've been really good. Thank you. We talked a little bit about the renovation. I'm finally seeing the light of day on the renovation.
Yay.
So that's nice.
Yay.
And I talked to you. We had the fantastic Jennifer Bernardi last week, who has her alter ego, Tiggy Upland, who's going to be on the show regularly coming up soon. But it was such a play of coincidence when I wrote to both of you guys after the show. We have her fantastic webcomic miniature series, Upland, that we hopefully everyone's got to see since the last episode. So we're sitting in front of the house, like you know, and be it as it may, as we know that mom has no square footage of wall space she doesn't like, we had on the wall an old printer's cabinet where they kept all the letters in like the old time printing press where you used to take the letters and pound them into a little thing and throw them through, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool, an antique drawer. And she turned that into a shadow box that has about a jillion different compartments in it. It was filled with miniatures. She found miniatures from all over the place herself. She had miniature pots and pans and books and gardening tools and all sorts of fun things. And it's one of the few things I was able to convince her not to put back up on every square foot of wall space. So I sent that out to Tiggy Upland, and she should be getting that today. So I'm excited for that.
I saw the pictures of what you did, and I think it is so, so incredibly sweet and wonderful. And, you know, now the cool thing is we're going to have to see when these new things appear, what goes where. But I think what you did is so thoughtful. And, you know, also maybe now, you know, Tiggy is going to be able to get a new wig or something, because after $800 on, maybe this will give her a breather. So when she's on the show, she can, you know, really say it like it is. I'm sure she will anyway. But no, I think what you did is so thoughtful, and your mom, because parting with those things, I mean, she must be going. How's she doing? I mean, it's got to be exciting now that it's coming to that, because now you can actually see, you know, it was it hard in the middle. You know what I'm saying? Is she doing better now with understanding and seeing where this journey is going?
She's doing a lot better because it was so much clutter, because I tease, but she really does have so much stuff that she has on walls and in cupboards and in things that we had to take it all down to renovate, and it was just in rooms all over the house. And you know how frustrating that is for anyone when their place is unsettled, right? So now that we got everything back, she's in the process of putting things back, and it's getting some floor space back on the room, and so she's becoming a happy camper once again. So that's always
nice. That's nice. That's crazy when your world goes upside down you shake up one of those snow globes. You know, when renovations happen like that, it kind of shakes you because you realize how much of that is your nest in a way, you know. But redoing that is really good, and it is really healthy to do that. So well done, and I'm proud of her, and I'm proud of you for doing it with her.
Well, it's a good task to have, and I'm glad we got it finished finally. We're on the downhill slug, so that's always great.
Well done.
I had a couple of great Left of Straight shows actually this week too. I want to tell you about on Monday. I had a very interesting conversation in California. It's called the California Community of Men. They're a men's group that meet in LA and Palm Springs, all about just kind of reconnecting with each other as part of our LGBT community. It's men who love men in all forms of our community, be them gay, straight, bisexual, transgender, whatever. And they have weekly coffee clutches, and they have weekend retreats. And the interesting thing, that it would be a hardship for me, but I can understand how it can really bring about some transformation. There is no alcohol. There's no drugs. There's no smoking. And worst of all, there's no electronic devices allowed at these things. How crazy is that?
Oh, for a Luddite like me, I don't drink. I mean, I did. I was a bartender I bartended as well, you know. And it's just one of those things. I just out of choice, I stopped drinking really. I mean, it doesn't mean that, you know, there might be a glass of champagne in my hand if I get to New York for the, for the Lambdas or something like that. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I kind of like – it's not so much the alcohol or the drugs or any – well, the drugs, we don't want people doing drugs, of course. So, you know, I grew up years and years ago, as I say, when people did drugs to escape reality, and now so many people – I remember, what was that thing that people – anyway, like, you know, like everyone was getting prescribed stuff. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. Right. You know, I was back in the 60s when everyone was – what did he say? Craig Ferguson, the comedian. I'm stealing this joke. He says, I used to buy my drugs when they were illegal. But anyway, I don't do any of that, you know. But for me personally, the thing about it that I really like is the turning off of all the electronic devices. That's what just put, you know, piqued my ears up, because I find there's a whole different communication that people are sometimes trying to squeeze in conversations between swipes and looking down. And it used to be that people would look over each other's shoulders to see who would come into a room, you know. So something like
right,
that, where
exactly.
Actually everything goes back to a conversation. If you're talking about appreciating, a gender, a form, a person, a personality, who this person is, if they're already there in front of you for a get-together, do you really – I'm just posing this. I know I'm a Luddite, you know, but do you really need that electronic device? So I kind of applaud it and find it interesting.
Yeah, I think it's real interesting. I'm pretty excited to – hopefully next time I get out to California, I'm going to try to hit when there's one of those weekends to go up and join it. But I'm the same way. I'm a teetotaler, a cocktail now and then. Never been a drug guy, never been a smoker. I have kind of got addicted to my phone, so that would be my personal challenge. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. No, my addiction's coffee, so they already have it. And good conversation. Oh. So you got me here for that. So that's why I'd be all set.
You and I have already bonded over coffee. I don't think there's any coffee cup too small for either of us.
All right, I'm caffeinated. I'm ready to go. So let's get our guest on, because I really am. I can't wait to talk to Ilya and find out how things are going.
We'll be back in just a couple of moments with Ilya Cruz, but let's listen to Blake MacIver and Starting to Believe.
Staring down that long and winding road, I felt like I could never start again. Flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when. Before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for, yeah. Give me all that I need. And baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Looking up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those feeble lies, cause now you bring me all I could ask for. All that I need, and baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. I guess I'll start to believe. And though my doubts close in, I know that you'll there, I won't despair. My dream coming true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control. Your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. Yeah. Give me all that I need. And baby, you gather the pieces. I guess I'll start. 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 I guess I'll start to believe, yeah.
And that is our great friend Blake MacIver with his song Start to Believe off his Time Manipulator album. Well, our first guest is here, and we are so excited to have him on. He's the executive director of Faith in America, an organization dedicated to ending religious-based bigotry towards LGBT people. He's a prolific speaker and writer on religion, bisexuality, media and culture in general, and has been seen everywhere from the Huffington Post to Upworthy to Mike to Details Magazine and many more. His Faithfully LGBT photo series recently raised enough money for crowdfunding for a real exciting project we're going to ask him about. Please welcome to the show the fantastic Eliel Cruz. Eliel, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Kevin and I are so excited to have you here. Now, I need you to say your name for everybody because I've listened to your tapes. I honestly have listened to your YouTube tapes over and over and over again, trying to say it how you say it. And between the first pronunciation and the Puerto Rican, I can't get it. You got to help me out here.
Okay, so I usually go, you know, for English-speaking individuals, I prefer Eliel. And then if you can speak any kind of the Spanish or French or any Latin languages, it's Eliel, which is a lot harder to say, obviously. But
Eliel. Eliel. This is Kevin. This is Kevin. I want to try it. Eliel.
Yeah, that's very good, Kevin.
See, what I used to do before, I cheated. But I used to cheat, and I used to remember how to pronounce it by spelling the letters L-E-L.
Yeah.
When I first heard it, that's as an American, that's how I remembered it. Sorry, go ahead. Here I am interrupting how to pronounce your own name. Boy, that's just being an American. There, I'm going to shut up now.
No, it's okay. Yeah, no, it's a very unique name. I love my name.
It is cool.
We do, too. And as we've said, you're so prolific in everything you've been doing. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Let's start with your fantastic new position. Congratulations. You are now the executive director of Faith in America. How's that going for you, man?
It's going amazing. It's been about 5 weeks since I've been brought on.
Congrats.
Kind of hit the ground running. Thank you so much. Yeah, so it's you know, it's such an exciting time for the organization, and it just kind of fit perfectly, right? So I'm young. I'm 25. I graduated my undergrad last year, and I was kind of waiting to see the correct position for me. And I applied for some different things. I even got offered a couple of different jobs, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do. I really wanted to work in faith spaces because that's really what I've been really driven to do the last 5 years of my life. And this job popped up, and it just worked out so perfectly because it's such a perfect position for me. I'm really excited to take the organization to it's going in the second decade, and I'm really going to take it to the next level. And it's really essentially doing a lot of the same things I've been doing, right? So continuing to write in media, create media events. I also do a lot of work behind the scenes in pitching a lot of stories, writing a lot of press releases, just really trying to shape the media narrative around LGBT stuff, which I think is so important now more than ever as post-marriage equality, all of the hurdles that we're going to be, that we're currently trying to, you know, go over are religious-based more than ever. And I think it's going to, I think LGBT groups are finding it ever more difficult to fight back these messages without directly engaging religion and only using secular language. So I think Faith in America is a really pivotal spot to really harness the religious language and really highlight those individuals who don't use religion to oppress individuals, right? I think that the religious right have really appropriated religion and kind of really sold and trademarked and their own version of really Christianity. And I really want to highlight the affirming faith allies that we have because there's plenty of them, and as well as LGBT people of faith so we can stop this kind of dichotomy. So I'm super excited. You know, we have some really great things that we're going to be doing this year, a lot of digital media campaigns, some events, and you'll see our name all over the media like normal.
Well, do you find it, I mean, your congratulations on the position, but wow, how about the timing with everything that is now going on? I mean, Here's one thing I'm just curious about now, because you are there, you're creating, you're working, and I have been a fan of yours. And I think you know that from the first time we met, you know, at the White House and before, because I had read your stuff before. I was doing, you know, my homework on people on the Bisexual Leadership Roundtable and all the rest. So it was by the time I met you, it was so cool. I already had your voice in my head through your writing. And anyway, it's just always been a pleasure, Eliel. For me, though, the timing of this, I was like, you know, my fist pump was going up in the air with everything that's going on. And I'm curious, are you getting the airtime? Are you getting, you know, because sometimes you hear so many negative things. You hear so many, you know, you get that other voice that is, you hear rattling, which is the voice of hatred or bigotry. And it seems to get so much airtime. And you're like, where is the counter voice? And I know that you are in so many ways doing that. Are you getting the press, the space? Is it a fight? What is it like for you?
I think it's a lot better now. Like I said, after post-marriage equality, than when I first started writing. I started writing almost 5 years ago now on the really on the intersections of faith and sexuality, yeah, being my primary focus. And I fell into writing that way. It wasn't ever like I planned to be, but here we are. I think that, you know, it's just like one of those things where you look back and you're like, how did this ever happen? But
Do I know that? Anyway, I'm not going there. Go ahead.
But when it comes to fighting, I think that there's a lot of people that are wising up to it and recognizing, at least from like the LGBT advocacy side, the strategic sense it makes to really harness religious language in a way that helps our movement and not avoid it. So I think it's getting slightly easier than it's been in the past couple of years. But I think that there's like a lot of also, and like understandably, there's a lot of people who in our movement don't want anything to do with religion, either because they're not religious themselves or because they have really awful things that have happened to them in the name of religion, which is totally valid. And so that, and I don't, you know, want to negate those experiences. But I think when it comes from a strategic standpoint, regardless of our own experiences, I think if we look at this and we can see that there are benefits to harnessing those religious, like the religious narratives and things like that. But I think it's getting easier. I think, I have a really great mentor. Mitchell Gold is beloved in the community, and you know, everyone knows his name, and he's fantastic. So I think also having him co-sign my work is really nice as well in opening doors for me, because he's done so much great work as a businessman and as an activist for as long as I've been alive. So I think it's just a little bit, it's nice. I'm getting a lot of really great meetings. I mean, we've been in, you know, this past week we were in Billboard magazine. We worked with Lance Bass
on
our press release on Mississippi, and, you know, our names were in, in these entertainment magazines, really, you know, specifically discussing the religious aspects of these Mississippi laws and saying why it just doesn't make any sense. I think we're going to, regardless, I think people are rising up, people are getting, are opening doors, and regardless if people continue doing that or not, I think that it's inevitable. We're in a position we can no longer be avoided, and I think Faith in America is the perfect organization to, you know, spearhead this.
No, it's just really quick. I'm sorry. I just wanted to tell you this. I talked to another member of the Rainbow community. It was an elderly gentleman and a bi elder, basically, you know, had a pretty negative experience through the religious experience that he had. And it was like, you know, along with family and other things, it was just a stigmatizing experience. And I mentioned this organization and what you were doing. And I had, you know, we hadn't spoken yet since you know, this is our first time speaking, I think, since you got the position. But I said, children now, I said, if it wasn't an option for you, isn't it nice now, if you weren't aware of it, don't you want for kids today to have an option in the Rainbow community to be able to use and feel their spirituality isn't something for which they're going to be stigmatized? There's something welcoming there. And, you know, and I saw a light go on in this person's head that I hadn't seen go on before. And so for that, even for the seeds that, you know, that you're planting for people who haven't even thought about it, and, you know, I'm just so proud of what you're doing. But congratulations, because I saw a light go on in this person's head when we had that conversation.
Oh, that's so fantastic. I think a lot of people, you know, in our elders in the LGBT community who either are religious and just have gone away from any kind of organized religion because of their experiences, or aren't religious and are away from religion, kind of forget, like, what it's like to be, you know, that 15-year-old kid still in a religious home. They can't just, like, pick up and leave. And, you know, a lot of times these religious parents, you know, will only pay for college if it's a Christian college. Like, there's a lot. It's not as simple as just leave those institutions. And a lot of us don't want to leave. So I think that it's super important for those that do want to leave and can't, and for those who want to stay and have a right to stay, to create space for individuals like us to, you know, to make it safer. I don't believe in leaving oppressive structures that it really I don't believe in leaving in spaces that are oppressive when those spaces were meant for us. Like, I don't believe the church was made for straight white men. I believe the church was made for all, centering those that are really on the margins. And so I have a birthright into God's kingdom and in the church. And for me to leave, it would be forsaking my birthright. And I want to stay and fight for that.
Now, tell me about, how is it access-wise now? I mean, you've been a force in and of yourself, like you said, for about 5 years now, for all things you've done. But now with Faith in America, you have people on the board like ex-Governor Jim Greeley, which has a fantastic story, Shelley Wright, the country singer, Judith Light, who's just been such a great champion of our community. Do you feel like you have more access now than you had before? Or were you at a point where you already had that?
No, I mean, like, I think, you know, there's definitely a lot more access that is being opened to me. And we actually have a really amazing board member that we're announcing. I think it's tomorrow. Stay tuned for that. It's just really, really fantastic that they're joining the board, a large name as well. No, I mean, I don't know how I think that, you know, it's a little bit of both. I've had a lot of access given to me because of my work. Like, it's really weird the people that follow me. Like there's people who are like really big celebrities who like follow my work and share my stuff without me ever reaching out to them. Like, I don't know, just like random people, like Sarah Ramirez from Grey's Anatomy is a huge fan of mine and shares my stuff, and now we follow each other on Twitter, and she's like the only, like one of the only bi characters on TV, so that's fantastic. You know, I'm starting Shane Crone from the documentary Bridegroom recently reached out to me and wants to have like lunch because he loves my writing. Like, just like really random people that like I never really thought about, like, you know, I never reached out to, who like have been impacted by my work on the interwebs and reached out. So I have been given some kind of access through them wanting to like continue to share my work and collaborate and things like that. But definitely
it's well deserved. Hey, it's well deserved, man. You're a great writer. I'm so happy because you really, like I said, I met you through your writing before we met, and I was never disappointed any step of the way, but I'm so happy for you because that kind of attention is well-deserved in what you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You know, as this starts to pick up momentum, here's one of the things that I was curious about, because for those that are, you know, I know we're going to talk, I love your website, by the way, and I don't want to take away where we're going with some of the other movements, but just for me right now, for those that are upset, one of the questions I had, I think it was our last program, I was interested on your opinion on this. If you think things like the ban from New York and Vermont, I don't know if you know this, I'm sure you do, but the state ban, whether it's having any kind of impact on, they were doing state government travel bans to, I think it's to Mississippi. If that's picking up momentum with other states.
I mean, but I don't think that, I mean, it's not a huge impact. I think all the things combined are a huge impact. And if anything, it's more symbolic than anything else. I think what's really making the impact specifically in the South, when we're discussing anti-LGBT laws that are really Republican-led, is when we hit them in their pockets. So seeing a lot of, seeing businesses pull out, seeing concerts being canceled, when that money starts to leave the state, that's when we really start seeing a response. So that's really, for me, what I think has been the biggest drive into getting the Republican-led Senate to try to either, you know, veto, reverse, whatever it takes to get these laws no longer.
No, I guess the reason why I ask, because not everyone is in it. You know, here's my reason for saying it. If everyone does part of it, like I saw, what was it, John Grisham wrote something about it. You know what I'm saying? So writers don't necessarily have, you know, they don't fill concert stadiums, but they can still have, you know, so if everyone has a way, so, you know, if everyone that wants to can even write to their state senator. So if New York and Vermont did it and they're not entertainers, or if they're not Bruce Springsteen, I'm so happy for those that are doing it. And I'm just trying to think about this wave because other people have asked me, you know, hey, what can I do? I'm in Massachusetts and, you know, our state governor wants to be seen as, you know, LGBTQ friendly, but, you know, we're right next door and we should join join this band as well. I'm just wondering because I'm fitting them in their pocketbook.
I think if there's you know other states that can join on, totally have them banned. But those things are more you know a lot more symbolic. I really prefer putting pressure on businesses, celebrities. Businesses and celebrities are the two big components that really get people. It gets the headlines and it gets the Republicans shook.
Every day, I like seeing the next person who's joined it, and I look for that. So it is making an impact for me. It really keeps me interested in the news now, seeing who's going to join it.
Tell me, Ilio, now, how do you guys, as your group, Director of Faith, how do you kind of straddle that line as opposed? I mean, you're there for the LGBT community, and how do you guys straddle that line between a religious freedom bill with the name, quote unquote, that they're using religious freedom in there and its oppression towards our LGBT community. What do you guys do? How do you guys step in and what is your approach to these type of bills?
Are you saying like, as in, what is it that we do like for this type of
stuff?
Yeah,
give me more of what you guys do.
So Faith in America works in two components. We work in denominations, like religious bases, mainly Christian, and politics. So anytime either churches or religious leaders use their religious beliefs to oppress LGBT individuals, we will respond, as well as in politics. So things that we're doing, and these are things that you know that we've done, and some of it's a little bit of a different direction now as I've worked on my strategic planning and things. Like, for example, the United Methodist Church in May is doing, they're going to be voting on whether LGBT people can be married in the church and if clergy can be ordained. We're working with some of the LGBT groups in the Methodist Church to really put a lot of media pressure on the church to really bring awareness that this is even happening because it's a large church and a lot of people outside of the religion don't know that's happening. And then in politics, it's also responding to that, right? So we send press releases to make sure that the story is in the headlines and the way it needs to be in the headlines. I think it's more than just being in the news. It's about being in the news and saying and doing the correct talking points and really not shying away from religion. It's contacting, doing policy work. It's contacting, senators. It's contacting senators. It's sitting down with them. It's trying to help them see the light. So our main focus is doing media work and seeing how media, and because for me, our movements or any of our civil rights movements is coupled by advocacy, like actual, like on the ground, like field organizing, and our media. So those two combined are really what makes our movement go forward. And Faith in America is going to really do a lot of heavy emphasis on media with still some field organizing as well.
Now, is that something now that you're there? And here's the great thing, because you have my God, what you've done at 25 just is my jaw drops open. You know, I was just loving traveling around the world at that age. Not that that wasn't a great education as well. But for me, I mean, the thing that I like about it is in going forward with this, I just find it like, it's one of those things you were talking about earlier. I just found for my own program, I had people reaching out from Africa and from Europe this past week, and it amazed me. You know what I'm saying? So in terms of this as a model, because let's face it, globally we have problems. And I think of problems like what I know about. I'm not kidding, but I tell people I'm a recovering Catholic. But I think of what happened, I just read recently about what happened in the Mormon Church. And I'm wondering how much of that coverage was thanks to what an organization like yours does.
A lot, there was a lot of movement by LGBT Mormons, and there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes, a lot of conversations that happen, a lot of emails. The coverage is super necessary. As when it comes to global, unfortunately, I haven't had any experience internationally. I hope that's where my career will take me eventually. Yeah, global is a little bit out of me.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, I would go on a global speaking tour with you any day, my friend. So trust me, if it ever comes up, I'm inviting you. So stay tuned, my friend, because I travel well. I travel quick and I travel well, and I brush up quickly.
Let's get back to your early years, Ilio. What is your background? Talk a little about the early years.
Well, I grew up I was born and raised in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. That's the same religion as Ben Carson. I've actually only ever gone to Seventh-day Adventist schools my entire life. I've never been to a public school. So I was and still am deeply embedded in a Christian evangelical faith. I came out to myself when I was, I think, 11. I think it was Google for me when I figured out that I was bisexual. I was I typed in boys and girls, I think is what I typed, and the word bisexual came up,
You're such a writer.
I just didn't, I didn't have that language or vocabulary for me to be able to correctly identify my sexual orientation, and so when Google allowed me to, see that label, it was, a really big moment for me.
Wow.
But I came out to myself that then I came out to friends, naively so, when I was around 13, 14 years old, and it was just one of those things where I was kind of defiant, where people would call me gay, and I'd be like, no, I'm bisexual. My Christian Academy asked me to leave, I wasn't allowed to stay after it came out. So I had a lot of things that happened to me by religious leaders, right? So after I asked to leave from my academy, I remember seeing a pastor at a local Walmart when I was 15 years old, and I was like, "Hey, pastor!" And I had my hand out to shake his hand, and he looked at my hand and he just walked away from me. I had a lot of ostracization by Christian leaders like that, and it really impacted my faith and also my family as well, because it there was so many family and friends that just stopped talking to my entire family as if just all of us cutting us off. So I had an issue. I was really upset with religious leaders and Christianity, and it was a matter of for me, when I was able to reconcile my faith and sexuality, when I was able to recognize that I was able to have a relationship with Christ independently from organized religion, and I realized that Christian leaders, they're human and they mess up, and they're not always speaking directly for God. So I was good with my faith when I was 17, 18, and I didn't want to engaged in a church, but I was happy with reading my Bible and having my own little worship, and I was good that way. When it came time for college, I missed having being in a religious environment. I used to do a lot of stuff in my school. I was in choir, I was in band, I was in student senate, I was in our gymnastics team and our basketball team. So I was always deeply involved, and all of it was very religious as well. And I just missed that environment of being around people who had similar belief system as I did. And so I decided to go back to a Christian university out of my own volition. Call me a masochist. Yeah. But I had a really great time, especially the first year I had a really great time. My undergraduate degrees are actually in international business and French studies. I had a fun time, and I dated a girl for the beginning of the year for the first semester, and then the second semester I dated a guy for about 2 months, and the following year I went to France because one of my degrees was French, and I broke up with him because I was we're not going to date over long distance over just 2 months of being together. We'll see what happens after. Yeah. Anyways.
Right.
I just don't like throwing down. Okay. So when I came back, I was being harassed by my ex-boyfriend, and at one point he threatened to physically harm me, and I was really worried about what to do. I went to my university through my student university handbook, and it didn't say anything about LGBT people, not good, not bad. And so I assumed with my previous experience that I was going to be expelled just for being, an out bisexual person. Luckily, that wasn't the case, but it took a lot for me to get there. I ended up going to a supportive faculty member who I heard the grapevine had a gay son, so she was going to be okay to talk to.
Smart move.
And I showed her, I showed her the emails and the messages I was getting, and she was worried as well. So that's what she took me to the administration. And the administration, like I said, handled my case very fairly. But it was a really interesting experience because I was in this room with three other administrators telling them what was happening, and I was crying, and I was super upset. But I was actually also advocating on the behalf of my ex-boyfriend because I knew something wasn't right with his mental health, and I didn't want him to be expelled and scapegoated. I was I need you guys to help him. You guys need to help him as well. So it was through that experience that I realized, even though I've been out and I have a really great family that loves and supports me, that I was there's a lot of situations that LGBT people on Christian campuses could go through that no one hears about because they're not able to be out or they're not sure if they're able to be out. And I just couldn't imagine what was happening with the closeted LGBT people on campus and what that meant for them. So I ended up helping create an underground gay straight alliance with the professor that I met with. She opened up her home to me, and we had met twice a month at her home, and we just had different – it was a safe space for LGBT Christians or LGBT people who were going to Christian college and weren't necessarily Christian. And so that started – it's like it snowballed. I ended up writing a proposal to my university to include LGBT people underneath harassment discrimination. They took me seriously. The following year, we became the first Seventh-day Adventist university out of 14 in the U.S. to have anything underneath discrimination and harassment for LGBT people. I created a coalition to create more of these on other Christian campuses. So there were two other gay straight alliances on our sister schools, and we decided to create a network. So I was the president of IAGC, which was a network of these gay straight alliances on Seventh-day Adventist campuses. So the first time we met, there was representatives from three college campuses, like about 15 student leaders, and we kind of created the framework of what we wanted the organization to be. So we wanted it to be a resource group for LGBT leaders, help us, you know, create action plans for the year, share resources with each other, and advice and ideas. I ran that organization for 4 years as a 501c3, and we created five other gay shared alliances on five other university campuses, so that there was eight universities nationwide. So I've worked with like hundreds of LGBT students, everything from kids who've been kicked out of their homes and our organization stepping in and giving them money to help, you know, get them to finish college, from suicide, you know, cases of students who had attempted suicide, individuals who, you know, were contemplating it, students who were being harassed by their resident hall advisors, name it. Our LGBT leaders or myself has stepped in and helped act as the advocate in behalf of the LGBT student and my university or the university. So it was through that time, it was the year after I started doing this advocacy work, that I fell into writing. I got connected with the Huffington Post, and I didn't think I was ever going to write, but there was a lot of stuff happening in my denomination during that time period, and I felt really upset at how official church magazines were responding to LGBT people. They weren't ever engaging us. It was a lot of straight people discussing us. And so I reached out to Noah Michelson at HuffPost. Well, it was gay, now it's queer. I wrote my first blog piece, and then I just started writing every time I got upset by my denomination. And it was a really interesting experience to be, you know, to be going to a school and having a massive platform to critique people who sat on my, like, so the president of my world church sits on my school board, because I went to the flagship school. So, you know, I'm critiquing, you know, a church that's 18 million worldwide while still being, you know, in a space where I was underneath, you know, the rules and regulations. So it was a really stressful 3 years, but it was really, you know, it made the work that I did made me just, it was more fulfilling than anything I've ever done. So I'm really happy that I did it. And also, like, being kind of a lightning rod on my campus in terms of my writing and things like that allowed a lot of LGBT kids to come out. So, like, you know, it's, some of these groups have like 10 to 15 LGBT kids who come every, I say kids, they're college students, but I always say kids, LGBT kids who come twice a month. Like, my university had like 70. I think, you know, it was partly because I was on campus and I wasn't getting reprimanded. I mean, I had there was always issues. People called my school to get me expelled and lawsuits and blah, blah, blah. But like, because I was there to take the brunt of it, a lot of students felt comfortable coming out because they're like, well, if he's not, you know, getting expelled, I'm okay to just be my own little stuff. So it was actually I acted as an umbrella for that, if that makes sense. And so it was good.
Hey, can I just say something to you about that? Because this is coming from the whole healing stigma side of my brain now. It's starting to get really itchy and fuzzy, and that means it's a good thing. And what I just wanted to say to you is so much just congratulations, but noticing this, that for our listeners, not even an organization could, you know, rock your faith, right? You kept going on your own, and then you go back of your own volition, that, you know, like into the jaws, right? And then open up safe space for others. I mean, this is what, you know, it's like I said to, you know, and of course reminding us that you're 25, but I mean, this is, you are a rock star, my friend. And now, Scott, do you get why we had to have him on the show? I mean, this is unbelievable. When this guy walked into the White House, it's like, you know, I might sit there and know a couple of people and be nodding and trying to, you know, not get knocked over with the coffee. This guy walks in and like everybody knows him, and they should, you know, I mean, you're a rock star. But when you say that, for me personally, the thing I just wanted to say and compliment you is, obviously, your identity, your fearlessness in all of this. You know, no one could take away your religion from you, but is there someone special in your family, or is there something where you, because your fearlessness is something that I so, so love. And, you know, I just, I don't know where those things are for, I had, so you know, I had 8 years of nuns and 4 years of Jesuits. And then I went back into, you know, graduate school to Boston College as well. But I wasn't an activist at that point. I was doing my own thing with writing and exploring, you know, my kind of my roots through taking Gaelic, basically, taking Irish as a culture and realizing what stigma was for that, for my family. You know, where do you get that fearlessness from?
Thank you. That's very sweet. I think, you know, my advocacy came out of necessity, is what I say, is that I really became an advocate, not because I ever planned to, but because I didn't want anyone to go through even a little bit of what I've been through. I'm at Keynote at because last year. So, I mean, before even being essentially expelled from my Adventist Academy when I was 14, I went to an Adventist elementary school where I was severely bullied for about 2 years. I ended up having a psychotic break and was put into, I was outpatient in children's like mental hospital for a bit. My biological father's schizophrenic, so it also runs in my blood. But the amount of pressure that I was going through, both emotionally and physically, just I wasn't able to hold up to. So I've been taking medication since I was like 9 years old. I took antipsychotics until I was 14, and I've been, you know, and I still to this day take depression medication for severe depression and anxiety. So I think that, you know, I had to mature quite quickly. Not just because of that, but just, you know, my experience. And I think that it's you know, what's really interesting also, my experience really reflects, you know, the stats is what I say a lot. You know, my experience and my story can be kind of shocking when I sit down and tell people everything that I've been through, you know, as a Latino, as a bisexual, as someone who grew up in poverty. My mother raised me and my sister as a single mother with $18,000 a year. Like, these are experiences, you know, that I've been through, but these are experiences that are reflective of our community, you know, when it comes to mental health and poverty and other issues and bullying and other issues like that. But I think that all those things really, you know, I've been through hell and back at a very young age. And so it's made me very resilient, and it doesn't make me immune to everything. I feel like I've gone through, hopefully, what's been the worst of my life. the rest of these things, you know, the rest of these things, I also feel a lot more solid. I'm an adult now. You know, I have a supportive family. I was a child when I went through a lot of the things that I've been through and the discrimination that I faced. I think perhaps that's where, I'm not sure it's fearlessness, but I think it's curating knowing that I've gotten through these things. God helped me get through these things, and God will continue to help me get through more things.
Well said.
That's amazing.
Well,
I mean, I'm not 25, and for what, correct me if I'm wrong, what I remember... What I remember is when we graduated, one of my favorite girlfriends in high school, she went to an Adventist college, and Advent is a really, to get all that done through that religion, what I remember of it at the time, back when I was 25, there was like no dancing, and you couldn't go to like the R movies and everything. I mean, it's pretty hardcore religion to start with, isn't it?
It's a really conservative space, but yeah, it's a really conservative space, but... Just like most religions, there's, you know, a spectrum of individuals, and there's a lot of, you know, it's really interesting for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, there's a lot of cultural beliefs that aren't necessarily always like 100% doctrine, as in like the majority of us are vegetarian. Like, we're really big on health message, which I think is really fantastic. We're really big as a church on eating clean and living healthy lifestyles and working out. And I think that's like super important. You know, those are good things. But that's not necessarily, you know, there are some biblical aspects of it, but a lot of it, it's cultural. It's not necessarily, you know, and there are people who eat meat in our church and who drink and things like that, but we don't, most of us don't drink or don't, you know, eat meat or things like that.
Let's go to some of your other accomplishments. There's so much to talk about. Talk a little bit, how about the hashtag Faithfully LGBT photo series? That was such a great project I read about.
Yeah.
And now, of course, you take on this fantastic job with all these responsibilities. How is that project coming along for you?
So Faithfully LGBT came through, it kind of happened organically. So Faithfully LGBT is the name of the column that I wrote, a religion news service. I think I'm one of the first, if not the first, LGBT person that was given a column at a religious site, or at least, you know, at a moderate religious site. They're not necessarily liberal, but they host very conservative voices, and they also hosted my voice, which is very liberal. So I wrote a column for them for a year. And so what I wanted to do is I created the hashtag in order for people to be able to click it and see all of my pieces, right? So I would, like, tweet my pieces there, and so people could, like, you know, keep track of it on Twitter or what I was writing. But then every now and then I would go on to, like, a rant about something that some Christian was doing, some Christian conference, and LGBT people, and then I would use the hashtag to, I don't know, to, like, to well, I was using the hashtag while I ranted. And as other people started using the hashtag as well, it just kind of organically created this thing. So what I call it now, it's the LGBT hashtag is an online space for queer people of all faiths. The majority of people who use it are Christian-based, but we do have some Quakers, some Jews that use it. I'm trying to get more individuals to really feel comfortable using that as an interface space. But we tweet news articles, so things that are happening in various religion stuff and LGBT stuff gets tweeted underneath the Facebook LGBT hashtag. Commentary about stuff that's happening. People find each other that way. You know, there's people now that have it in their bios. People have, like, met off each other that way off each other in, like, different cities. So it's just kind of, you know, morphed into a thing. And then in last fall, I wanted to create T-shirts or some kind of merchandise to, like, I found it really unique that this was happening, that the kind of organic. Like, there's people who have this in their bios who don't even know me, like, don't know that I started this hashtag, don't know who I am. And so I was like, that was really fantastic because I was like, wow, like, this is really, like, like, it's growing, like, by itself, like, people who don't, you know, don't even follow
me. It's
a
movement.
Yeah. So I was like, let me create some, like, T-shirts and stuff, because, like, no one has, like, merchandise for LGBT people of faith. Like, some of the LGBT faith orgs do, right. But, like, it's kind of their logo or their conference. Like, it's not just, like, hey, I'm an LGBT person of faith. So I created these T-shirts, and I wanted to, and I was selling them online and the conference, and then so I go to a lot of conferences, I speak at them, and I attend them about LGBT stuff and faith, like pretty much all of them I go to. And so I was like, I met so many people, you know, so many awesome stories from LGBT people of faith that I was like, I've been saying forever that I was like, someone needs to capture these stories and do a campaign. And I'm always running it with that. I'm always doing 10 million things at once. And I was like, I can't do it. And I was like, let me just do it. Let me just organize it. Let me figure this out. And so, you know, the first time we got some photos together at the Gay Christian Network Conference, which happens every year, it's the largest gathering of LGBT Christians. You know, we got like 9 photos. You know, I coordinated a team of people that I know, some graphic designers that I use, some photographers. And then it just started snowballing. So it's really simple. It's really easy. I just asked people a couple of different questions to get 4 to 5 sentence soundbite about their experience about it, being an LGBT person of faith, or something that they want people to know about their faith and sexuality, or whatever it may be. And I think it's really great. And I think that there's no other, I mean, there isn't any other content really like this very much. There's a couple photo series on LGBT Muslims that I found, which I think are great, but not so much.
Yep.
So I launched this crowdfunding campaign before I actually got hired at Faith in America. Because I was funding this out of my own pocket, right? Because I believe in paying people for their work as much as possible. So I was paying.
Yay!
You know,
artists love to hear that.
Yeah, and so, like, I mean, I was freelancing and I was making good money. I mean, I have a ton of loans, so I'm not making a ton of money. But I was like, I can figure this out to, you know, pay a couple or whatever. So I was paying people out of my pocket. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I think people really like it, so let's see if people will contribute to it. And they totally did. I wanted to raise $5,000, mainly so I could, it's paying for the trips to go to different cities for conferences and things where kind of LGBT people are congregated. It's also paying, you know, my graphic designers, the people who created the website for us. It was paying for the website that we just built, a lot of things like that. And so it got funded. And I want to do video work soon, so that's going to take a lot more money. But I think it's something that we're going to continue doing underneath Faith in America as a kind of a fiscal sponsor. One of the campaigns that we're going to continue doing. So I'm really excited about this. Actually, 3 photo shoot dates coming up, 2 this weekend, 1 in Atlanta, 1 in Nashville this weekend. There's another one in South Carolina soon. And then we have some other ones happening in Houston, LA, Seattle, Denver, and somewhere else. I forget it is. So,
congratulations.
So
that's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, so our website.
Hey, you've got to talk about the website. The website is beautiful, by the way. And
by the way, just the
faithfully LGBT, the purple shirt there. I know I'm old fashioned. I love the motto too, but make sure you tell people about this because I love it. It looks great. It moves so well. So I know whatever you do, whenever you work with people, it's an investment. It's not a cost. It's a real investment, and it's fantastic. Could you just speak for our listeners how they could find all that? Because I love how you did it.
So everything, you know, we have faithfullylgbt.com. Our Twitter is at faithfullylgbt. Our Facebook is the same, faithfullylgbt. It's all on faithfullylgbt. So we're on Twitter, Facebook,
okay.
Instagram,
okay.
Tumblr.
Yeah.
Our actual Instagram
you're
is
brilliant.
A lot of
fun. You're everywhere.
Because we have – our Instagram is a lot of fun because we have, like, original, like, memes that we're creating with, like, Bible verses, nice quotes. We also have some, you know, memes with, like, the Quran and some other sacred texts. So we kind of have, like, 4 or 5 memes go up a week there that are just, like, really awesome, like, inspirational and spiritual and things like that. So I really like our Instagram for that reason. But
You're constant. Yes. No, that's what it is.
I try to say to
people, social media is like, I've got great people that help me with my, I'd be lost. I'd be like those three guys out on that island trying to spell out help with palm fronds if it wasn't for the people that helped me with social media. But you have always been leading the charge and well in it. So well done.
Oh, thank you. No, yeah, and then I also have merchandise that I'm selling. I have 2 different T-shirts that I'm selling. I actually just put up stickers. Now, those are on my website, and I need to transfer the Faithfully LGBT stuff to the new website, but I just haven't done that yet.
Okay.
But my website is just elielcruz.com, and then if you click the merch button, I have actually a bisexual T-shirt there that I'm actually almost sold out of. Like, those sold out. Those are, like, those went so quickly, and I bought, like, 100, okay?
Yeah.
And people have almost bought all of them in like a month. Like, it's been really quick. But I have 2 Faithfully LGBT different T-shirts, and a bisexual T-shirt, and this Faithfully LGBT sticker on my website that you can purchase. And I always give a portion of the proceeds to the Faithfully LGBT stuff. A portion of it goes to various LGBT faith orgs, and the bisexual one, I'm giving a portion to a bisexual organization.
That's really
awesome.
You're a rock star in every level.
All right, well, as keeper of the time clock, it's my duty to start wrapping things up here. We've kept you an hour already. I appreciate it. I want to finish on one thing, talk a little bit that I thought was really interesting, the project that you curated for the Advocate, the 27 by stories. Talk about this for just a couple of moments before we have to go here.
So the 27 by stories is one of the first things I did at the Advocate. So when I was at the Advocate, I was there for a year and a half. I was a bit of a bisexual correspondent. And there was, you know, it's kind of hard to find news that is specifically bisexual based compared to, like, mainly because a lot of stuff gets gay-washed as well. But
right.
So I wanted to create some important features to, like, that will help. Because, okay, so I see the bisexual community where the trans community was, like, 5-10 years ago in terms of visibility. And so I wanted to put more faces to bisexual people in media. And so 27 by stories was my idea to break down a whole bunch of stereotypes by just showing the diversity of our community. So I asked, crowdsourced, I asked for 27, I say, like, relationships. Because, like, they're all in various couplings, right? So some were monogamous, some were non-monogamous, some were polyamorous, some didn't have names for their relationships. Some, one or more of the people were bisexual in their grouping. So it's a huge diversity. And I asked them all the same 4 questions and kind of grouped their answers and then wrote, you know, a piece, you know, wrote some intro to kind of give, segue to the answer. So I think it was a really awesome story. I also wanted to create, I created memes. I got those out of, because, you know, being as a freelancer, it's kind of hard to, I'm not a staff writer, so I didn't have access to the art team like that. So I sourced it out to one of my friends, and because everything that I do, I really like to do it at a certain quality. So I sourced it out, and I got these really cool memes done. I put the hashtag on it because I think it's very shareable online. And it's been, you know, it did really well. I did a second one called 21 A Stories around the asexual community. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm hoping to, you know, to still write and do some bisexual advocacy stuff. I'm going to be a lot more busy. So the things I'm going to do, I think I'm going to be, like, bigger. So, like, I'll take on, like, bigger projects and not necessarily a lot of small stuff. I had this really cool idea to bring a couple bisexual YouTubers together to do this video that I have in the works, and I won't say yet, but you'll see things like that. So I'm still going to be doing bisexual advocacy stuff. And I'll still be writing pieces. Like, right now I'm writing a piece for Vox I'm writing a piece on immigration and like the specifics of bisexual immigration and what bisexual people who are seeking asylum and immigration go through. Because I don't think anyone talks about that. So I actually attended a White House event last month with bisexual asylees, did a lot of research, and I talked to a lot of people. So I have to finish writing that soon whenever I find time. But yeah, so I'll also be doing some bisexual stuff. But that's, you know, something that I do, I think, because I think it's necessary for the bisexual team. But I, you know, I needed a bisexual person in the media, when, you know, 10 years ago, and I'm trying to be that person for the bisexual teams of today.
Well, we really appreciate you having on, Ilio. It's been a fantastic show. Kevin, do you have any last words or thoughts or questions?
I just can't wait to see you in person again. I really, really am so proud. I'm so happy. Here's the only thing I say. It's not a question from an old guy like me. Don't take on too much now, because that organization really deserves to go to the next level with your leadership. So you're so smart.
Thank you.
I know you are. And I'm not telling you a damn thing you don't know. But pick and choose, because, you know, you're now inspiring others to do those other things as well. You know, hey, I got a question for you. Are you going to be in New York in first weekend in June there for the Lammies? Are you going to be around?
I will be there. I don't know what the Lammies are, but I'll be there. I mean, I'll
all
be
right,
there.
Well, we'll hook up off air. And like I said, I just can't wait to see you again and give you a huge hug, because I'm so proud of you. But thank you for taking the time with all this stuff. It's so busy. I hope everyone gets a chance to listen to this show, because trust me, you are truly a healing stigma hero, and I'm so proud. So go keep doing great things, and thanks for spending the time with us tonight.
Thank you.
Well, we appreciate having you on. I hope all of our listeners go to your website again, and you have a fantastic YouTube page too. I hope they'll go to your watch a lot
Thank
of your videos. You.
You
have some great videos on there, just fantastic things. And I just want to make sure now, are you still going to be, people want to actually be able to have the chance to listen to you speak, are you still going to be in Denver for Our Witness in a couple of weeks?
I am. I'm going to be in Denver for a couple of weeks. You know, I've had to turn down quite a few speaking engagements this last couple of a month for a lot of reasons. I've been really busy, but you know, Brandon Robertson, the guy who's coordinating Our Witness, is a good friend of mine, and I think it's super important. So I am going to be there in Denver next weekend speaking, and I'm going to be doing a little bit of bisexual Christianity TED Talk type thing, which will be a lot of fun. But I'm also going to a few updates real quick then. I'm going to continue doing YouTube, and I'm going to do it in a weekly series once I'm moving back to New York into a new apartment May 1st. So until I get settled, I haven't had time to do, like, regular videos, but I'm going to be doing that very soon. I have a lot of really great ideas. I have a meeting tomorrow, which I think will happen on a podcast for a publication, where I'll be talking about politics and pop culture through a social justice lens. So I think that should be launching in a couple of months. And there's also a web series show that I'm pitching here soon that hopefully will get picked up, which will be a lot of fun as well. So there's going to be a lot, even more, if possible, avenues in which you can access me.
Yay.
That is awesome. Well, for our listeners, again, the one that I definitely know about is Denver, which is going to be Saturday, April 23rd from 1 to 4:30 at the Denver Community Church. You can look up all the information at www.thisisourwitness.com. Ilio, it's been fantastic talking to you. We appreciate having you on. Hope to have you back soon. And if you'll hold the line a little bit, we'll be back in just a couple of moments, okay?
I mean, that was just amazing. I don't know how he finds time to breathe.
It's crazy. He is just so busy and doing so much work for so many different communities and so many different things. It's just amazing.
He must have to have his resume bound.
I'm telling you, I can't believe he did all these Seventh-day Adventist Church. I mean, that stuff is amazing. All the things he got through, that's a busy church. I mean, like I said, I had a very good friend of mine from high school that went to that church, and they are just, like I said, they're big in the vegetarians. I remember I went to visit her. The first time I went to visit her, we had those meatless patty, the veggie burgers and everything. It was my very first veggie burger ever back in the day.
Ooh.
It was like, wow, this is just hardcore stuff. But she loved it. She loved the school, so that's fantastic.
That's great. That's really great. No, I mean, he's going through so many things right now, and to take the time out, you know, and yet that's really what's so wonderful is like we've been so fortunate to have on as a guest, and I'm looking forward to, I know you're going to talk about some of our others that are coming up. It's really exciting, but we've just been so fortunate because these are programs that are really making a difference, you know. I mean, what he's doing is forging ahead in a space that, you know, so many people are, as he said, what was it, like 70 people in his chapter were finding a safe place and a safe place to be themselves and to find your identity along with your spirituality within a religion like that. Wow, that's just, I mean, that's really an amazing thing. And that's, I'm proud to have someone like that on Healing Stigma Radio.
Exactly. And if anything has caused stigma in our society, religion has done it for everybody, not just our rainbow community, but gay, straight, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of stigma around religion, and he helps bring that to the forefront so that you really can have a strong faith and be in any community. I think that's just awesome.
Yeah, and let's face it, that conversation, not just screaming, not some kind of, he's so smart about knowing how to properly allow the media to hear this other side in a dialogue. I'm so proud when people use language to do that in a skilled, artistic, and passionate way. So, yeah, really great job. It was really fun tonight. I enjoyed it.
A couple of great shows coming up. Like you said, next week we're going to go back to bullying again, which is unfortunately ever present in our society. But we're having the fantastic Ronnie Kroll and Eddie Lobo on. They have created an organization out in California called Friend Movement, and it's all about just the need to really be friends. Reach out and friend someone. Every month they go out and they put together a bunch of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and go out and feed the homeless. They do so many things for the LGBT community, and I'm really looking forward to having both of them on next week. After that,
going
to be talking with Margaret Cho, who's just amazing. it's going to be a tough subject. I mean, she was she had a lot of abuse in her life early on, and we're going to talk a little bit about the stigma of that. She is just such an amazing person, and just talk about someone who's risen from it and really thrived. She is one of those.
Yeah.
And then the week after that, we bring back the amazing Dr. Johnny Bowden. So we just have lots of great shows coming up.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you, these Thursdays really keep me going. I so look forward to them. And, the lineup that's coming up, again, though, let's make sure that people know about what is it? There's a chat room. And, of course, if there's someone that you would love to have on the show, reach out and give us a shout. We have now on, I think we're getting a lot more followers on Twitter as well for the Healing Stigma Radio program.
Exactly. Please reach out and follow us. If you're listening to the podcast and you have a Thursday from 5 o'clock on off and you want to listen to us live, please go on to our live station, blogtalkradio.com/leftofstraight. As Kevin said, you can go right into the chat room. If you have any questions for our guests, we can see if we can have time to get them answered or pass them along. If you have any, just to know what's going on and keep your breath for everything going on, check out the Twitter page, always updated at Heal Stigma Radio. Use the hashtag Heal Stigma Radio if you have any questions on anything. We're going to be using Twitter a lot in the future to ask when we bring back Ask Tiggy column. So you'll be looking forward to that on the Twitter thing. So much to do. Check out the website. Listen to our past shows. Get in contact with us there. We are just really enjoying doing this for everybody out there.
Well, I'm really happy that you had a chance to not have to saw anything or paint anything. So I hope this pastime for you is absolutely healing as well, Scott.
I appreciate that. This is how bad it is. I was so afraid of having to put up all this stuff back on the walls. I went out today and bought those little sticky things that you put on the walls. Oh, I just put a sticky on there. Don't even have to hit my thumb with a hammer today. So I'm doing good.
Smart man. Smart man.
All right. Well, you have a great week. Keep doing all you do in your Healing Stigma program. You're helping so many people out there. It's starting to catch fire everywhere. I'm so proud of you. Be sure to catch every Monday and Tuesday my Left of Straight show, where we have lots of fun entertainment guests and foodies and authors and just so much fun. We will see you guys next week. That is next Thursday, the 21st. Have a great night. Let's finish off the night with another song from our good friend Blake MacGyver. This is Who We Are. We hope to see you next week. Everyone, talk to you soon.
Pulling past the signpost of this tiny weathered town, the tears welled up so high inside, I thought that I might drown. Everything different, but it all looks the same. And now you're here beside me, and I'm rid of all my shame. I just hope that they will see what is always been in me. How much do I love you? Will they understand everything it took for us to get those wedding bands? The road ain't always pretty, and home sometimes seems far, but twists and turns, the lessons are learned, growing pains and scars. But it's time for me to say, this is who we are. I was a small boy, I never thought there'd be that perfect happy ending for anyone like me. I could read the signals, fake smiles and the blessed hearts, and I still hear the whispered words that said I'd never be apart. Now I want them. The strength of